Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
We have William Lamb with me here today. You could learn what his team is up to by following him on Instagram. So head over to instagram.com/william.upgrade, but you got to take out a couple of those vowels out of that. So it is U-P-G-R-D. That's going to be a clickable link in the show notes. We are all going to focus on mindset here today, as William has a program called Upgrade and Unlocking the Human OS for High Performance Success. Well, I really appreciate your time, William. And I have said this time and time again, frankly, this is something that I wish we'd do more of. Mindset is such a big part of success in business. And I frankly think a lot of people, at least when I started, thinks a lot of this type of thing is a bunch of hooey, and they don't take things seriously.
I used to do that too. And that's simply because most people have never been taught the connection between the mind and the physical world, at least to the degree that we all deserve to learn.
Yeah. I thought it was just a bunch of hokum at first. And it wasn't until I realized that I was doing some of the things before we hit record, my family would probably attest to the fact that I'm constantly walking around the house with a podcast playing in my pocket, or an audio book or something, just to keep my mindset in the proper space. Otherwise, I can drown in negative thoughts.
Maybe able to help with that.
Okay. Well, give me a little bit about your journey here. How did you find your way to this, especially putting together your own program?
So a good way to tell the story, I'll give you the big picture and then feel free to ask me any detailed questions. So in the beginning, it was inspired by this thought, how do I live 1,000 lives? And at that point, I was thinking, you know, yeah, there are medical advances, there are biotech advances, but I was in my early 20s and I was thinking, I don't know the possibility of me even having access to that kind of stuff. And who knows if that'll happen. So I started thinking philosophically and or psychologically and or strategically, what can I do to leverage the knowledge of 1,000 lives? And I thought, you know what? I could realistically work with people that I design, that I want to learn from, 1,000 people or more, and I can specifically extract things that are their problems, solve it, return whatever the answer is into their mind, and observe if it works. And if it works, I will see a pattern it won't take 1,000, it'll take maybe 10, 20, 30. By the time I hit 1,000, I will have learned their history, their ancestry even, right? Their ancestral programming, what got passed down that they don't even know they have, to their current life experiences, their own journey of work, romance, and health and everything, all the way to projecting into the future. So if I can learn the journey of 1,000 humans from different walks of life that I design, then I can get a very aggregated list of understanding, patterns, strategies, tactics, and how they make decisions. And so I began to do that. Now, obviously that didn't just like came out of nowhere. One day I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. It all started when I was a child. I was visiting my grandparents, and long story short, I was with my mom, and we were in a train station somewhere in Asia, and I observed before my eyes human trafficking. I saw a kid, and this may sound a little graphic, it's extremely unfortunate. I'll leave out all the details, but I saw a kid with no arms or legs begging on the street. And I'm like, how is this possible? And as a five, I actually might have been only like 3 or 4 years old. I asked my mother, was this child born without arms and legs? I was just curious and shocked. And she said, well, I don't know. I'm like, I know she knows. She's not telling me. So I nudged her. Finally, she said, no, this child was taken and things were done to this child. Therefore, as a consequence, this child does not have arms or legs. I immediately became very angry. And I thought, how could any human do that to another, a child who was like my own age, maybe a year or two older? It's like, that is terrible. And it almost snapped me out of a childhood, that moment. And I thought, I got to do something about this. Now, as a 3 or 4 year old, I couldn't do anything, really. I didn't know what to do. So in the back of my unconscious, for a good chunk of my upbringing, of growing up, all the way into my 20s, I was wondering, what can I do? And I thought in the beginning, make more money, can help these people. But money does not solve the problem. It requires a complete system, and it requires a change in the way how people think, and how not only these people who took the child, but their parents, their upbringing. I need to impact society at a larger level. So fast forward to my 20s, as I begin to think, how can I live 1,000 lives? I begin to piece things together and thought, if I can figure this out, how to optimize the human mind and remove the problems that causes greed, causes conflict, causes many of these issues that doesn't have to exist, I think I would be able to upgrade humanity. So that is the origin of the name.
Well, you said that this memory was in the back of your mind. How did that eventually come forward again so that you could recognize it, even in order to define what you just talked about?
When someone knows exactly what to ask, they would ask exactly what you just did. That was a brilliant question. Thank you for asking that. So 2015, I was running a startup. It has nothing to do with what I'm doing right now. And I found myself stuck, plateaued. And the business was not performing as what my co-founder and I were expecting. So I decided to take a sabbatical, take some trainings. And I'm not one to just carelessly jump into any training, because I was still interested in carefully putting in what I need to put into my mind. So I found a gentleman and their training, and I went to it, and someone I investigated a lot. And I got to the training. They asked me this question. They said, what's the one thing when you achieve it will make this training the single most powerful investment you've ever made? And at first, my mind thought money, make more money. Second, I thought maybe I can solve that problem I couldn't solve when I was 3 or 4. And then what I actually said was, I want to find my romantic partner. I want to find the one. And they said, when? And I said, how about in 5 months? Because if it works, it's unlikely that it's a coincidence. And they're like, cool, make sure you design her and take massive action. So coming from an engineering background, I did go back and design her. I put together 80 plus attributes on a spreadsheet, rows and columns prioritized. And then 4.5 months later, I was engaged. And I thought, maybe this is a coincidence still. But then I found out that the weekend I set the goal, I produced my first iteration of the design, she broke up with her fiance. And that was the moment I thought, if I could recreate this by designing other people into my life, other opportunities, other events, if I could design a sequences meetings, then I could potentially produce what I always wanted since I was a kid, to solve that problem for humanity. And I figured I needed something audacious, something bigger than myself. So at that moment, when I got engaged, I was like, okay, let me repeat this. And if it works, I found the gold mine and I have found a way to that will lead to me solving this problem. So that was the beginning of it.
Hmm. So I appreciate you saying that, because I, up until then, I was struggling with what you meant by observe those that you've designed. Earlier, you were talking about that. So that brings quite a bit of clarity. So are you suggesting then that most people, because I'm going to say most people don't do this, is to write down and create that target that you are trying to achieve. Most of us are just kind of flailing through life in some random direction and hoping for the best.
And with minimal strategy, many people will rise to the top 10%, top 5%, top 1%. If we were to be extremely conscious about designing who we want to come into contact with and the scenarios we'll experience, the design will cause the mind to be able to focus effortlessly. And the mind will also begin to undelete the opportunities that are around us and remove the ones that are distracting us, which preserving us precious energy and time.
So how do you motivate somebody to sit down and do this then? Because I've said time and time again on this show that most people will respond to pain or react to pain versus heading towards any kind of pleasure. And personally, the only way I've found to get that done is to establish your why strong enough to override anything else. Do you have a different path for that?
So I like what you said, the why. And the why, it's to go one step further, to categorize the whys. Because if you ask people why, and in general, most people don't even think about why and they don't have an answer. But if you ask those who are more conscious, they'll say all the reasons why they don't want to experience the pain, which is the pain that you just mentioned. So they'll avoid the pain by doing whatever it takes. But if we were to want to truly free our minds, we need to become aware of what we want. And what we want in a way that actually incentivizes our own unconscious mind. Because if I ask someone, hey, what do you want? More likely, first off, they don't know. And if they do, they'll tell us what they don't want. Very few can even get past 10 to maybe 20. Even some of the multi-millionaires or billionaires will say maybe 30 to 40 things. We invite people in the beginning of the upgrade process to design at least 100 things and 100 experiences that they want. Things because they're trackable and tangible experiences also.
So you got my brain just racing in all kinds of directions here right now regarding this. You know, I've always, like you, we started this podcast off by saying, you know, at first I thought a lot of this type of thing is a bunch of hokum, but the more I dove into maybe doing a little journaling and vision boards and a few of other things and planning out our business, that's when things started to line up. So taking it to this next level, upgrading that part of the process, if you will, I could definitely now see the benefits of that. Just to remind everybody, head over to William's Instagram account. I believe you post quite often there with a lot of tips and strategies and a few things. You'll find a ton of value if you head over there. If you find some value in what we're talking about so far, do us a quick favor and share this with one of your investor friends. And if you are watching us on YouTube, please like and subscribe. So, William, I would imagine that although you're dealing with or you're trying to achieve working with 1,000 people, as you mentioned, I don't know where you are in that design or that part of your process, you've probably run into frequent mindset blocks that people have to work through. Like, what are some of those common things that people have to work through in order to realize that this is something that they do have to do and accomplish?
Yeah, we've worked with thousands of people now, and obviously some more intimately than others. And what's beautiful is one of the most common things they experience is also something that we can actually turn to their advantage. So humans have this natural ability to focus, but that doesn't sound like a normal thing, actually. But just bear with me for a moment. A lot of people will focus on what they don't want. And because of that, they will find distractions to distract themselves away from what they don't want. So we think people can't pay attention nowadays, but not really. They're really good. Humans are really good at focusing, but they choose not to focus on the things they need to solve because, first off, they don't have the strategy, resources, or whatever reason. They find distractions because the distractions gives them the dopamine, gives them the whatever happy chemicals they're after. What I propose is that, what if we, instead of letting our mind be saturated with things we don't want because of society bombarding us or media or whatever it is, instead we design what we want to bombard our minds with by choosing to focus on all the good things. And if we don't have enough good things, according to whoever's standard, maybe our own standard, we can then begin to design what they are. I even go on trips and or vacations just to look at things, experience things that I want to fill my neurology with.
So this is a kind of an interesting track, and I don't know if we should go down this road too far, but one of the things that I think that kind of hinders people or kind of puts a distortion on the want is our surroundings, is society, is what we're consuming, whether it's on TV, radio, podcasts, what have you. And it kind of gives us a distortion of what we want. I mean, we see it all the time on YouTube Shorts and TikTok. Is we kind of live in a world of want, and it becomes overwhelming. You're keeping up with the Joneses.
I love that concept. And it is true. There are a lot of those that are also just distractions. So we got to be able to filter out what we actually want versus what we're told that we should want.
So what kind of exercise would somebody have to do to get through that barrier?
So it's in fact one of the first levels of training and first exercise in the first level of training. We ask people to make a 90-year plan. Now, 90 years is very realistic, in fact, especially as how biotechnology, AI, and different things are advancing. But that's not even the point. The point is, most people don't think far enough. They're thinking New Year resolution, and then by February 1st, they forget, right? And most people think it's impressive if they think 5 years, 10 years in advance. If one can think decades in advance, and that's just, I'm hinting at, that's just level one, first training. In our next level training, we start to stretch people's mind really far. We ask them, can you design a 1,000-year plan? And then we get even crazier, like, I mean, real crazy. By the time they hit our third level of training, we have roughly four levels of training. Third level of training, we asked them to design a 1,000,000-year plan. Now, that sounds like a lot. We don't need to go there. But if someone even start with a 90-year plan, they will put everything into perspective. What they want, what they don't want. The Gucci stuff they buy right now may have zero impact on their 90-year plan. Now, if it does, they need to have designed how that actually impacts. Maybe they're leveraging the brand image. Maybe they're leveraging the audience. Whatever it is, they need to do that. But it's easier to look at how things will impact their life if they can zoom out. If people are too zoomed in, it's easy to distract them, and they don't know what the purpose is.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't mind, in the minutes we have remaining, I was hoping that we could maybe give the audience some direction on a couple things. Like earlier you said you could maybe help me with my negative self-talk. Like, what are some of the things that could be accomplished there? What are some of the things I should try?
So there are two methodologies, because if you go deep enough, the negative self-talk will dramatically decrease in the beginning. And then you may, what people typically discover is that there's a good period of time of quietness, and then there'll be some that will pop up, and then you can resolve them. But what I'm saying is there's a deep structure. If you resolve that, it will decrease overall negative thoughts, thinking, all that. instead of you having to constantly work at it. I'm not saying that you shouldn't. I'm just saying it will decrease so much so that you won't even be having thoughts that you need to resolve stuff. And the method in which you can do that, I'm going to give you the two-step process, which is a simplified version of some of the other stuff that requires context. The first step is, when did I create this problem in my mind? Because we're not asking why. We're not getting a bunch of reasons. Instead, we're asking when. Like on a computer, when did you install this program? You know, like on Mac or Windows, you have this thing that you can reverse back to when something was installed, to just the moment before, so you don't have this whatever thing you don't want. Our human mind can function very well like that. If you give it a timestamp by asking, hey, when did I begin this way of thinking? You can literally reverse back to the moment before and realize that was not a problem at that point. Like someone maybe was bullied when they were a child, so they felt like they needed to act a certain way, talk a certain way. And then when they're an adult, they maybe speak in a way that causes other people to feel, you know, very small or whatever. Well, they can actually trace back to when they decided that they needed to do that right around that time. And if we can go back to moments before they were bullied, that was never part of them. Then the second step is, what can I learn from it so I can let this go? Now, the linguistics there is important. What can I learn from this so I can let this go? So I can let this go is the mathematics inside of it. It's a key part of the structure, because if I say, what can I learn from it? You have 1,000 learnings easily from one thing. But what can I learn from it so I can let it go presupposes the learning has to be related and directly going to cause this problem to go away. And if you ask that question, the mind will resolve it. And then you will cease to have the negative thought pattern in that category or that specific manner.
Yeah, you beat me to it. I was going to ask, in a lot of that type of thing, I would imagine would have to go back to not only let it go, but finding or feeling like you've been forgiven, or you've forgiven that person or that situation. And that is easier said than done.
Unless you find the when, because if you ask why, it will take a lifetime. And if people even resolve it. But if you, and there's actually a final step, I'll share it anyway. I think your listeners will easily be able to imagine the context. The final step is, what do I want instead? Because once you resolve it by asking when, and you learn what you need to learn from it, lessons learned will not repeat itself, so you don't have to resolve it again. But you need to set a new neural pathway, new path on how you're going to think about it in the future. So you ask yourself, what do I want instead? And that is the moment why you need the design. If you don't have a design scenario or design outcome or design what you want, your mind's like, where do I go next?
So if you are able to rewire or create this new pathway and it's a new form of thinking, is this a great way in which to break recurring habits or falling back into those same routines?
Certainly. Recurring habits are a way of communicating something unconscious. So they're merely message delivery mechanisms.
Well, let's go jump to another topic then, because, you know, I've heard some people repeatedly talk about imposter syndrome. And I would imagine that that's the situation in real estate investing. At least when I first started, you know, you're knocking on people's doors, you're trying to buy houses. You don't know what you're doing. You're even asking yourself, what am I doing? Why am I here? Is there anything associated with that? Like, how do you work through imposter syndrome other than repetition?
You know, it depends on the point of reference. People are comparing themselves, right? Are they comparing themselves to someone who knows less or someone who knows more? Because no matter what, at what point, somebody can feel like an imposter if they're comparing themselves to the very best. But it's okay to feel like an imposter if we use what we just talked about to resolve it. Because that feeling continues to come up no matter how successful. We talked to these people that made, you know, we had this guy that just sold his company for hundreds of millions. still feels like an imposter. It's less of what he's done, more of what's the programming running in his mind.
I was hoping you were going to share a bit of a story. Like, do you have some accounts that you could share regarding some of the people that have gone through the upgrade process? You mentioned somebody who now just sold their business for millions of dollars, but you must have some pretty stellar stories.
Yeah, we have some that we can't share, but there's one that is on our podcast. I'll talk about it. So we have a gentleman whose company was at around 40 million. And when he came to us, we actually did a lot of that resolution stuff. And then we helped him design what he wanted. As simple as the process sounds, that's something that most people don't do, even multimillionaires. And his goal was to sell it for 100 million. And we asked him when. He said about 4 to 5 years would be very much the goal. And what oftentimes investors or entrepreneurs don't consider is that 4 to 5 years is simply there to justify to the mind that I'm going to have the time to make the mistakes or do what I need to do to get there. But it's like paying a bill. If the bill comes 4 years earlier, you need to find a way to pay it. But because that's not a bill, he doesn't feel like he needs it, right? So what we have to do is reprogram that to become a need. So one of the next steps after designing the wants, we program that to become a need or a must. So we're like, how about doing it in a year or year and a half? So long story short, he sold it in 14 months for about 100. I don't know if I can disclose the exact number, but it's over 100.
Well, that kind of spurs another thought, is that you mentioned that we as humans can be very focused. We can also procrastinate. And when you're talking the timelines you are, you know, whether you're doing a 90-year plan, a million-year plan, I mean, what are some of the strategies to make sure you're taking those initial steps, in those ones that are right in front of you, to stay on that 90-year plan trajectory, or in this case, that 4 to 5 year trajectory? Otherwise, we will have a tendency of procrastinating and waiting until the bill comes due.
Yeah, I'm super glad you asked that. It comes full circle to what we said in the beginning. People don't design what they want. If we design 100 things, 100 experiences as a part of that 90-year plan, it keeps our minds incentivized. The reason we procrastinate is because there's more pleasure in not having to endure the pain of doing whatever we don't want to do than actually doing it and resolving it. Until we add so much pleasure to the reward and the outcome by design, we're not going to move, because the human mind is designed to go the path of least resistance.
You know, that spurs another thought too, is that the fact that I've definitely found the importance of celebrating even some of those small wins, so that you do feel that reward in the end. We kind of fall into this, it's just part of the business, and we don't take a minute and actually reflect.
I mean, I think most entrepreneurs and investors would be surprised at how many of us live the no pain, no gain, how much suffering can I endure on my way to success? Instead, I propose that we need to actually change it to how much pleasure we can endure, how much pleasure we can endure on our way to success.
Well, William, this has been just a fantastic conversation. I want to direct everybody to your Instagram page again. It is william.upgrd for upgrade. You can learn more about what he and his team are up to. It's William Lamb. But I really appreciate the value you brought to the show. And if you're ready, we'll jump into the rapid fire questions. But before we do, is there a question or concept you think we should have covered?
I think we're good to jump in. If something comes to mind, I'd be happy to bring it up.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, what lie do real estate investors tell themselves and sometimes to others?
Oh, man, so many. But one of the biggest ones is the economy and the market is bad. Now, that sounds like a truth, but it's not, because the economy does not exist except in the minds of the collective. And if enough people believe the market is bad, that's literally how it works. So whenever there's a so-called not so good economy, there's someone profiting. So the question is, will I or will we choose to be the one profiting or not?
That's interesting. Do you have a book recommendation or what are you reading right now?
Yeah, I definitely have some books that I would recommend. There's a book called Transformation, T-R-A-N-C-E, Formation. It's a deeper read. It's about altered states and how we can change our mindset inside the altered state. It's a fantastic book and definitely not for the faint of heart. But there are some easier reads. I would say there's another book that might be on a completely different spectrum that I would recommend. It's called The Real Magic by Dean Radin, which explores the relationship between the human mind and the physical reality. I think if someone were to be like, hey, I want to actually go deep and read some books that will change my mindset in like the course of the book, those two would be, in fact, those two are part of how people prepare for our trainings.
I would imagine that kind of gives you an idea of their intention of what they're going to follow through to if they go through read both books.
Yeah, they're not easy reads, but I mean, The Real Magic is easier than the other one, but fantastic books.
If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that be?
I would say become more deliberate in designing what I want earlier, even earlier. I started pretty young, but if I knew how much impact when we begin to design what we want and what our mind does to filter out things that doesn't belong in the design and filter in what we design, I would probably start 10, 20 years earlier.
What single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented that has had the biggest time-saving impact?
I would go back to the design thing because roughly the math is 10 to 20 million bits of data hitting our mind every second. But our mind filters it down to 126 bits. So if we don't design, our mind just filtering whatever the heck that was already pre-programmed, which may not be what we want. So by designing it, I would even suggest that I have probably saved myself 3 or 4 decades by designing.
Well, William, this has been fantastic. Again, you can find him on Instagram, william.upgrade. And you can also check out his podcast. It's called God Mode Podcast. So if you're a gamer, you probably know what that reference is. But God Mode Podcast, I'll make sure to have that link in the show notes as well. But this was fantastic, William. I hope you'll consider coming back again.
Absolutely, be an honor. That was wonderful being with you today. Thank you so much.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.